Gimel Tammuz, Tuesday the 5th of July, Baba Yehuda Yoni Rubinstein, seeing us for who we are.
I recently had published my third book, and it was called On the Derech, Answers to Questions That Challenge Jewish Minds. And what the book is to take authentic questions that have been posed to me by generally young people, although, if I'm being honest, including some young people who are in very koshub kololim, questions of emunah which they're embarrassed to ask about, or questions of hashkofa which they're embarrassed to ask about. And so the book is 21 chapters, or 21 questions, and 21 answers. And Baruch Hashem, it's been matzliach. But it's interesting, when I wrote the book, and I didn't anticipate this, the number of people who would come to me with troubled teenagers who have problems with hashkofa. I didn't realize how very widespread this is. You know, very successful diseases are successful because you don't know the disease is there until, or when the disease becomes apparent, it's already spread very considerably, and then very often, Rahman Islam is too late in order to treat. It became apparent to me when I wrote this book. I mean, I thought it was a bit of a problem when I wrote it, but when I published it and people came to me with the problem, the scale was quite enormous. That people who don't know, our children, teenagers, and sometimes beyond that. In fact, you probably saw in the Jewish press recently in Mishpacha, somebody wrote this whole thing, a letter he got from somebody in Koilo. He says, his learning's going geschmack, after in Gewalvik, he's devouring Masechta after Masechta, but he doesn't believe in God. So I discovered there a problem which was quite enormous. So I'm going to say something which I know, looking around here, I've spoken here, I've discussed this speak here before, it doesn't apply, but I just want to say it anyway. We know a Yisoid. It's a poshut Yisoid. But Hashem is the source of Emes, right? Everything, he's the Makara Emes, as Chazal tell us. When we get an Aliyah to Torah, Hashem not someone that's Emes. Hashem is Emes. What he says is right. How he sees things is right. That's poshut. And if we are able to see things the way that Hashem sees things, then everything would be much, much more clear. That's obvious as well. Okay. So I want to tell you a story that happened to me. I mentioned, I gave Start Your Day the Torah away to your colleagues in Manchester last week, and I told them the following true story. I was recently in the United States of America. You may have read in the press that I'm moving there. I want you to know it's not going to affect me in any way whatsoever. Okay. Thank you. So there I was in the United States. I won't tell you exactly where, you'll see why in a second. I was in a New England state, one of the New England states. Never been there before. And there's a koil there, and they invited me in order to have a Shabbaton. And the Shabbaton was the koil in conjunction with the one Haredi shul, which was in the town, which was nice. They wanted to get together with the other Orthodox nearby shul, which was decidedly not Haredi, modern Orthodox. And when they approached them, there was a protest, a massive protest, by at least 10% of the shul, that the fact that they were having me to speak, it was beyond their comprehension that somebody like me should be speaking. I was astonished. I've never been there before. How can anybody be upset by me when, you know, and anyway, I'm incredibly nice. And it was what I'd written in this last book. What I'd written in this last book had profoundly upset some of the members of the shul. What was this? I wanted to know. So there is a doctor in this other show. Now this is crucial. Apparently the doctor spends his whole time, or a lot of his time, looking at blogs. I don't know if you know what blogs are. I'm not sure. I'm very bocky in blogs myself. But blogs apparently are online diaries. But there's also all sorts of pages in the blogosphere where all the gloves are off when it comes to Lashon Hara. There are some people who specialize in pointing out every disaster that happens in the frum world. Every child molester, every rabbi has caught doing something wrong, etc. There are people, and there are sites, by Jews, and sometimes, sadly, often the victims of these previously well-thought-of Haredi rabbis, rabbeim, etc., who publish every single scandal. This fellow spends his whole time looking at this, and even though he's a sort of Baal Teshuva, he spends his whole time looking at the failures of Klal Yisrael. He was particularly upset because I wrote, there's a chapter in my book, I think it's called chapter 19, I think, page 90, which is called, Don't Gedolim Make Mistakes Like the Rest of Us. Interesting question. Don't go down and make mistakes like the rest of us. Oh, that, I had to write that one very carefully, that chapter. And he was furious because I said in this chapter, at the end of the chapter, no. Right? And so, that was that. He and some of his friends went to the person who was sponsoring the weekend, who was a man who just recovered from cancer, to try and get him to pull the funding. I mean, you might have thought that you're going to leave somebody who's just been through a traumatic illness at that alone, but oh no. To try and pull the funding, the fellow refused. And so the Rosh Kabbal said to him, oh, incidentally, I didn't write that. I didn't actually write that. The chapter starts off by quoting somebody called Shlomo HaMelech. Right? In Sarik Ba'oretz, Shiasa L'Toy V'lo Yechta, he says. And I pointed out that infallibility is not a position that Judaism generally takes about anybody. That's the Catholics, right? We believe people make mistakes, and we learn from mistakes, and we get better. Okay. Anyway, so the Rosh Kabbal said to him, tell me, have you read his book? No, said the doctor. Have you read the chapter? He asked the doctor. No, said the doctor. But I'm an endocrinologist, and if anybody said that insulin doesn't control diabetes, I wouldn't be interested in anything else he has to write. So what he'd done was read the last, it's absolutely true, read the last sentence of a chapter of the book, in which I said, do go down and make mistakes like the rest of us. Check this out. Rarely. And only then, if Hashem, for reasons of his own, wants them to do so. Interesting. So basically, I mean, I don't know if you think of a doctor like this who gets your medical notes. You know, you go and you hand him your medical notes. He doesn't look at your medical notes. He turns to the last page. He turns to the last sentence of the last page and misreads the last sentence in the last page and is treating you, instead of for asthma, for athlete's foot. Right? You might not want to trust that doctor very much. However, and actually I thought it was very sad, during the day, the president of the shul actually came to hear me speak. And afterwards he came up and he said to me, I'm very upset by something you wrote in your book. This is obviously part of the of these people. And incidentally, I want you to know you've arrived as a rabbi when people try and have you banned. Right? I'm trying to publicize this, you know, because, you know, if your book gets banned, it sells tremendously. Okay, so please tell people that my book should be banned. And I'll become rich. And so after this, the president came, and he said, I'm upset by something you wrote in your book. And I said, yes, what? And then he started to get the advice. I said, I've not actually read it. I thought, this is amazing. Incidentally, this state was founded, like so many New England states, by people who fled from England seeking religious freedom, the right to express themselves religiously. And as soon as they did so, they immediately set up congregations who persecuted anybody else who didn't share their own religious beliefs. So apparently the past lives on. And what had I written that had upset him? I'd written that unless somebody is convicted in a Beis Din, you cannot believe that they are guilty. You cannot believe that they're guilty. And this upset him greatly. And I said, well, actually, again, I didn't quite write that. I had to read the whole thing. I quoted Reb Leib Gurewitz. Reb Leib Gurewitz, Rosh Yeshiva, Gateshead, Zechariah Baruch Hu, Rosh Yeshiva. Somebody once was convicted in Gateshead of some crime. And it wasn't a very pleasant crime. And somebody said to the Rosh Yeshiva, what a despicable person. To which he said, you can't say that. Well, he wasn't convicted in the Beis Din. Would I allow my children to be alone in a room with them? Certainly not. But you can't say he's guilty unless the Torah has convicted somebody, unless the Beis Din, Dayanim who are proper Dayanim, Sharim, etc., the whole process of the Torah, maybe, but not definite. That's, he said. But it's interesting to think that if you spend your whole time looking at all the negative things in our world, you come to, guess what, a negative conclusion about our world. It all depends on how you see things. Here is Rav Sro Salanter. Rav Sro Salanter asks an interesting question, and say for Oysro, and Yud Aleph, Maimer Yud Aleph. And he asks makes the following point. He wants to know why Chazal tells us that the Torah was only given to those who were oichlimon, who ate them on. And the Gemara in Yuma, that I involve, says the following thing. She'ira Talmidei El Es Rabbi Shimon Ben Yochai. So the Talmidei of Rabbi Shimon Ben Yochai asked him the following question. Nimalo yorad lahem Yisrael mon pom achas b'shona. Interesting question. The mon which fell in the Midbar fell every day, apart from Shabbos. So the question is, why did Hashem arrange it to fall in that way? After all, they're now getting a crop, a heavenly crop. But crops normally grow once a year. It's the wheat season, it's the barley season. Comes once a year. So why not have that the mon falls and they harvest the stuff and keep it, and that's fine until the next year? So he answered them, he says, with the fact there was a moshel. And of course, like all Jewish mushrooms, it's about a king, right? So there was a king who had a son, and the son, the prince, used to get his annual allowance from his father. How often did the father see the son?
Once a year.
I'm looking at all the fathers. Once a year, right? So the father didn't want to do that, so instead changed it that the boy had to come and see him once a week. So that meant that the father saw the son once a week, and more importantly, the son saw the father once a week. So the reason that Lamon fell every day was to be a chizuk in emuna for Chalal Yisro. Fine. Then, therefore, it seems to be a good thing. A good thing if you have food once a day. And yet, the Gemara Menachos, when it's talking about the toichacha and the things that are, Rachman Islam, threatened for Klal Yisro when we get into trouble in our emuna. So it says the following thing. Your life will be hanging by a thread, perhaps, to translate it. What does that mean? And of course, remember, the toichacha is that our situation gets gradually worse. It's part of a chesed Hashem Yitzvorah to let us know that we are in trouble and have to change, that our situation degenerates. It's not suddenly we're in trouble, but it gets gradually worse and worse and worse. So this, your life will be hanging by a thread. What does that mean, says the Gemara? If you've only got enough food for 1 year, you've secured one harvest, and the next harvest is very doubtful. Then the Paul says, because of Lala V'yam, it may be scared both night and day. That would refer to somebody who has enough food, or to put in our terms, you've got enough money for 1 week. So imagine you only get enough money for 1 week. I mean, how would you feel about that? I mean, imagine you're a student chaplain. You've only got enough money for 1 week. Okay. And the Paul continues there, and you won't believe in your life. That is somebody who depends on charity on a daily basis. Rashi says, etc. But you see, as Rashi points out, it's getting gradually worse. Okay, but the ultimate of the toichacha is you only have enough food for 1 day. So hold on, I thought it was a brocha, as the Gemara expresses it in the Talmidim of Reb Shimon Bar Yochai. It seems to be a brocha when they got them on daily, and now it seems to be a klala if you get them all, or if you've got your parnasa daily. So which is it? So this is what Rabbi Sarah Slanta says. Okay, Nira Bir Ha'im. Looks like this. Kihine. Says in Saita. Brings a Bryce. Tanya Rabbi Elezer Hagadol Omer. Call me Sheishla Pas Besalav Omer Ma'ochel. Mochar Ina El Miktanim. If you've got enough money, another Gemara. If you've got enough money for 1 day, enough food for 1 day, and you worry about tomorrow, you're only of the slightest when it comes to having a moon and a Shemiz Barach. You are pretty weak. Which means today's start your day of the Torah Shiur comes to you from somebody who's particularly weak when it comes to Minna. If I only had enough food or money for 1 day, I would worry. Right? So that's not good. Of course, what it's talking about, and the answer is, it really depends on your perspective. It depends on your perspective. When is it that the Toichacha kicks in? When the Jewish people have abandoned Amunah and Hashem Yitzvorach and gone over elsewhere. And then, when you have only Amunah for food for 1 day, that as you have no amunah and no trust in Hashem, you are going to panic what comes next. You're relying on the world, and the world has failed you. Whereas if you're a maimon b'Hashem Yisborach, then through for 1 day, what's the problem? Don't we say in our benching, Paseach HaSedechem as Bilech HaChairotzim, you have got ultimate stores of money and food, you open your hand and you feed us every day. Do you say that when you bench? Yes. Do you believe that when you bench? Yes. Do you really believe it? No. Otherwise you wouldn't be worried, and I would be worried. But I say it every day. So I'm a Mikitani. In other words, it's totally on you, Madrid. If you're a real man and you're going to get up for 1 day, it's no problem. Shem gave me today, they'll give me tomorrow. We said that my Mikazal was the Torah was only given to people who were oichli man, who were on a Madriga, that it was a problem for them if they only get food for 1 day. Hashem will give us it tomorrow. That's not a klala. But when you don't believe in Hashem, boy, it's a klala. So it depends on how you see things. Depending on how your perspective, how you see things, something turns from a klola into a bracha. Of course, the opposite way about. So in the Sedra, our Sedra this week, let's turn to somebody who hated our guts, and how he sees us. Listen very carefully. V'yar Balak ben Tzippor eskol asher osi Yisro le'emori. So, Balak, the son of Tzippor, sees everything that Yisro has done to the Emirates. But Yogar Moav and the Moabites, now we swap. Listen carefully because we're going to look at an Al-Sheikh here. But Yogar Moav and Moav are very really afraid Mipnei Ha'om because of the people. Moav very much Kirahu because there's a lot of Jews. The classic anti-Semites complaint: too many blinking Jews. Kirahu, but Yokatz Moav Bnei Bnei Israel and Moav are sick afraid from Bnei Israel. So the Alter points out: notice the change in the loshen and the designation in that posuk. But Yogar Moav Bnei Ha'om, Moav are sick of the Om. Moav very much Kirahu because there's lots of them. But Yokatz Moav Bnei Bnei Israel and Moav are also sick afraid, or don't know how exactly. Translate Yokas. How do they do it in English? How do they say? Sorry? Despicable. Okay. They despise or whatever. Mithne bnei Yisrael. Okay. But Yama Moav Elzikni means, and so they seek an alliance with the Midianites. Ah, so Yilach HaKol is called. So Vesele Kachloch HaSar Esere Kasadu Bolak Ben Tzipar Melech Lamoav Esahi. And he was a temporary king, as Rashi points out. He wasn't the real king from that time. Vishlach Malachim El Bilam. He sends Malachim to Bilam, Be'or, Besor Asher Al Hanor. So he sends to Bilam. And this is very interesting. So, as we know, the Moabites feel themselves threatened, and they appoint themselves a king who has experience in fighting the Jews, in his case, fighting the Jews and getting thrashed, but at least he sees the Yar bullet, because he'd already been a king, he's already been in a battle. That's the previous battle, the previous said, in which the non-Jewish world loses big time for the Jews. And Vayar Bolak Ben Tzipor, he saw. Now, Chazal tells, in Edom Ishmael Ariya, you can't compare something you see to something you hear. Right? It makes a big difference. Seeing. So he saw. And what did he see? As he sees our previous battles, right? Sichon and so on and so forth, how do the Jewish people fight? Well, how did we fight? Supernaturally. We didn't fight in a natural way. So it's Vayar Bolak Ben Tzipor, Eskol Asher Osi Yisrael Emori. He's seen how we fight and what we did to the Emirates. Now the Moabites, who are sort of his people, his temporary people, Vayar Gomoav Mipnei Ha'om. They're scared of the Om, the people, Moav very much Kirafu. Their perspective, what they see, they've heard how we fight. Be'in Dom Shmiel Ar'iya. What they see is an enormous vast coverage of the earth with Jews. And a huge number. And that's what they see and they're scared about. The Yochas Moab Bnei Bnei Yisrael. Now the word Bnei Yisrael. Before it was the Om, and now Bnei Yisrael. They've heard about how we fight, but their real perspective, how they see things, is there are lots of Jews. So therefore, because there are lots of Jews and they're outnumbered, their response is to seek a numerical equalizer. They want an alliance with Midian, and that'll even up the score. They have heard how we fight, but what you see makes the impact. What does the person who saw how we fight do? He seeks an alliance with somebody who can do supernatural things. He sends the Bilam. Because he saw that we fight supernaturally. It's totally in how you see things. He sees the true and real nature of the Jewish people. And therefore you have to respond to the true nature of the Jewish people. Otherwise, you're going to be in serious trouble. And in the Seder Beloischo, going back so further, there is the famous appeal by Moshe Rabbeinu to his father-in-law to not abandon Klal Yisrael, to not go. At that stage, we were just about to go in to the land of Israel, had it not been for the spies, and Yisroi wants an Ashpat just to go back to get his people to come a little bit early, because the whole world is going to come to Eretz Yisrael and join in and recognize Hashem's Baruch, the temple is going to be built by Moshe Rabbeinu, everything's going to be fine. And Moshe Rabbeinu says to Yisro, who's going to leave, but Yama Alma tells of a sonaki Alkin Yodato Chanasin Vamidbar, don't leave us, you know our camping's in the desert. And you will be for us as eyes. And again, we come back to seeing. You see things that we don't see. What does that mean? It's really quite simple. Because when you see things, all of us generally see things the same way. Right? I don't know if you ever visit Manchester. Manchester's main road. If I said to you, do you see Manchester? When I said Manchester there, did the idea of one of the most beautiful European cities come into your mind there, do you think? Oh, yes. Yum. not quite. There is a main road in Manchester called Deansgate. I don't know if you know Deansgate. And I asked even Mancunians, is Deansgate a pretty road? And they all go, And I said to them a very interesting thing. Next time you walk down it, look up. And if you look up walking down Deansgate, this year is sponsored by the Manchester Tourist Authority. If you look up Walking Down Deansgate, then you see a totally different set of buildings, some actually very attractive architecture, but of course people don't see that because people don't look up. We all tend to look that way, and people just don't see it. That's basically what Moshe Rabbeinu was saying to Yisro. Because we come from a certain background, we are Klal Yisro. Because we are who we are, then we see things in a, if you like, Jewish way. That is our perspective. And we all generally have, now it's quite varied, each Shevet has own little perspective, but within that variety, there is still a Jewish suga, a Jewish approach. But you come from a different background. In other words, you'll see things that we don't see. You will have a perspective that we don't have. And that's essential. So the role of a ger is, as the Zohar points out, Elsha talks about this at a great length in Rus, is a klipa. It is a klipa. What is a klipa? How do you translate klipa? A shell, or the skin. The skin of an orange. The function of the skin of the orange is to protect the fruit. The fruit can't exist without the skin. The skin has no raison d'etre without the fruit. There's a symbiotic relationship between both. The role of the ger, the role of the Yisra, is you see things that we don't see. Yisra had been the Kohen Gadol, to every, the Chief Rabbi sort of thing, to every Avodah Zorah that had gone on in the world at the time, seeing it was rubbish and gone. In other words, he knows. You and I might be trapped into thinking this looks innocuous, that's not so terrible. Well, I mean, do you remember when television first, gentlemen of a certain age, remember when television first came out? Almost every Haredi Jew had a television. Right? And what was on it? Very innocuous stuff. Ladies, this is how you make cake. You know, and all that stuff. It was really, right? After, but the Chachamim said, no, there's danger there. Now, I actually don't have one, but I think we all know the sort of stuff that's on that today. Let me put it simply, you would not want to sit down with your children or grandchildren and watch, certainly after 9 o'clock. They saw that what looked to be innocuous has dangers in it, right? Saw what was coming. That your role is going to see things that we don't see. And the kids, sir, that's exactly what happens when it comes to the story of Bilaam. Sometimes we lose faith in ourselves and lose our faith, even if we don't think we have. You know, last time we spoke together, I talked to you about Stockholm Syndrome. Do you remember this? What was Stockholm Syndrome? Stockholm Syndrome is that in the 1970s, when terrorism became a major industry, when people who were taken captive by terrorists, even when they were rescued, found themselves siding with the terrorists and trying to protect the terrorists. Strange things called Stockholm Syndrome. And if you remember back at school, if you were ever bullied at school, then very, very often what happens is that you take on the perspective of the bully. If you were constantly called stupid, or specky, or skinny, or whatever it was, you start to see yourself as stupid, or fat, or skinny, or whatever it is. When you hear it all the time, you start to see it in that way. And you start to see the world for a distorted image. Sometimes you need somebody else to come and tell you, no, that's not right. And somebody has to be the cleaver, somebody from the outside. Sometimes it has to be a bollock who sees Klal Yisrael when we stop seeing ourselves properly. And sometimes it has to be a Bilaam. And when Bilaam tries to curse the Jewish people, he does it in a very clever way, and we don't have time because we've got such a short amount of minutes left, but we know that the locations he chose had all sorts of Ramazim, had all sorts of Kabbalistic powers, because in this place, in the past, or in the future, the Jewish people would slip up, or had slipped up. And yet when he tries to speak to curses, Hashem puts the words into his mouth, and Hashem is the Makor Ha'emes. And therefore all he can say is, Matayva Ha'olekha Yaakov. The Jewish people are good. If you spend your whole time looking at blogs, and reading, you know, extremely anti-Jewish, you know, publications like the Jewish Chronicle. If you do that, then guess what? You're going to have a negative attitude towards Orthodox Jews. And this guy has a very negative attitude towards Orthodox Jews. You know, Bilaam really doesn't like us, as they say in the vernacular. He hates our guts. Nothing he wants more to do than to damage us. And Hashem, the Makar Ha'emes, knowing that the physical geographic location that he's speaking at, and does indeed, does Meramath, does hint at places and times where the Jewish people will fail in Sadiq or Shiasa Tov Yekta, we do slip up. Af al pikin, Matova Lekov Yaakov Mishkan Asakat Strong. And one last thing. I heard a wonderful story in Tripolis from my very close friend, Ramosha Kupitz. It's a true story. And he said that basically what happened was that there was a Jewish guy, or there was a Jewish guy who lives in Paris. And he lives in Paris in a very, very posh apartment near the Eiffel Tower. I don't know if you know Paris at all, but near the Eiffel Tower, that's where all the diplomats live. My wife has an aunt who lives there. And she's not a diplomat, but that's where she lives. And so basically there's a whole floor of an apartment, really rather gorgeous. Upstairs, the top apartment, is an Arab. And this religious Jew and this Arab get on very, very well. And so the Arab said to his frum friend downstairs, he said, hey, he's making a reception in his apartment next week for the King of Morocco. Ooh, said the Jew, this is a chance to make a bracha. Because of course, as we know, if you see a melech, then you got a bracha to make. There's the shayla whether or not Her Majesty the Queen, bless her, if she was to come here, whether you make that bracha or not, because malchus is the ability to, as it were, dispose of those people who irritate you by removing their heads from their normal locations. Whereas Her Majesty, of course, wouldn't dream of doing such a thing. the King of Morocco might. Okay, he has malchus. That's so he said, could he get, you know, Muhammad, whatever he's called, any chance of coming to the party? Of course. Anyway, so a week later, the frum Jew turns up at this reception to the King of Morocco with his teenage son. And so the King of Morocco is introduced to the Jew. The King of Morocco, as you know, is very pro-Jewish. Anyway, so, and who's your son? Shmuel, that was called. How old is he? He's 12, actually, just about to turn. And he says, saying 13, he said Bar Mitzvah. I mean, 13, Bar Mitzvah, and he started, you know, he's going to be Bar Mitzvah. What's Bar Mitzvah, said the King. So he explained what Bar Mitzvah was. And so, what do you do? Well, he reads from the law in the synagogue, and then maybe he gives a speech and expounds on some halachic idea, some Jewish legal idea, and then he's at a party for his friends, and people give him gifts, and score him, and various things. So the King goes, and along comes a flunky with the checkbook. So they take on a tray, probably, and so he opens the checkbook, and he writes a check, tears out the check, folds it, and hands it to the father. He says, Your Majesty, thank you very much indeed. And he opens it, and it was for, if I remember rightly, $25,000. I've incidentally sent an email to the King of Morocco. That's my bar mitzvah next week. And basically, he said, Your Majesty, I'm very sorry. Maybe I didn't make myself clear. Look, a bar mitzvah, this is too generous. A bar mitzvah, if somebody gives a $200 gift, that's very generous. $100, very simple. $25,000. The King said to him, for you or your son, $100 or $200 is a generous donation. But I'm the King of Morocco. For me, $25,000 is, that's a nice donation. Which is an interesting idea. In Schlachlichel, when we made that mistake, when once again we started to not see ourselves properly and doubt ourselves, and So whether it was the fact, says the Al-Sheikh, that the Jewish people were doubting the quality of the land of Israel, or whether they were scared that the people who inhabited it would be more powerful and stronger than the Jewish people, Hashem's saying, I'm not the King of Morocco, I'm the Melech Malki Malki, I'm the King of Kings. Could I give a shmati land, something which is substandard, and you're worried about their might, their military might, even if you've got bows and arrows and they've got neutron bombs, and you know, same, you're still going to get it. But says the Al-Sheikh, there's something else. The quality of a gift depends on two things. The person doing the giving, and the person doing the getting. So if it's the King of Morocco or the Queen, Her Majesty the Queen, if she was to give a gift, it's not a £10 voucher to W.H. Smith. Thus it's pastiche for her convent. It's impossible for a king to give, that's what he said, that's $25,000. But there's another thing. There's also who's getting it. If you give a gift to the King of Morocco, if you give a gift to Her Majesty the Queen, can you give her a £10 voucher to W.H. Smith? Certainly not. When the Queen goes on a trip and she's given gifts, it's something substantial, an antique work of art, so, you know, a Dali, a Picasso, something, but that's something that's costume. It depends on who's doing the giving and who's doing the getting. And Eno is saying, Le B'nai Yisro, your B'nai Yisro, my B'nai Yisro. And if people turn around and look all the time at the bad stuff, well, guess what? Bokerto, you'll see the bad stuff. And people who are enemies, not just this poor fellow who spent his whole time, which he really should stop doing, looking at blogs, but even people who really hate our guts, if they have to say the truth, and the truth comes from Hashem and Zborach, who knows our flaws? We do make mistakes inside of Oros Yatzitov Lechza. Still, Matoivu Ohaleko Yaakov.